And welcome in to the Tuesday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski in for Joe Rex Road today. Nick Kieser with us as well. PK, good morning. What's going on?
Good morning. Happy to be here as always. Hello, Nashville.
Hello, PK. Kieser, how we doing? What's going on?
Hello. Doing good. How are you?
Doing awesome.
Ready for your Masters, right?
Masters coming up. It's a big week. Hopefully the rain will stop down there. But, yeah, looking forward to the Masters this weekend. It's going to be awesome.
Jim Nantz. Courtside last night. Now he's ready to go.
It's a versatile guy, that Jim Nantz. Whether it's football, basketball, golf, he's ready to do it. So we'll see.
But disappointed. Can he overcome his disappointment?
Well, guess we're going to find out. What a game last night. For the majority of the game, and a bit of a dud of an ending, Florida, PK, last night did not get their first lead in the game, or excuse me, their first lead in the second half, until 46 seconds remaining in the second half. They were trailing the whole time, and then they get their first lead of the second half with 46 seconds left, and they win 65-63. The last two possessions for Houston in the national championship game, they do not get shots off last night. Turnovers by Emmanuel Sharp on both cases there. And Florida wins its third national title in men's basketball. Your thoughts on what we saw last night in the national championship game?
Well, it's never as good, right, when you get a defensive stop on the biggest possession of the game as opposed to an offensive look, even if the offensive look is a miss. Right, so Emmanuel Sharp goes up in the air, drops the ball, knows he can't touch it, decides that his best play is to stay away from it and wait prayerfully for a teammate to come and get it. I mean, there's still probably, 3 seconds there? Am I wrong? I mean, I know it's a very quick decision, but I think the right thing to do there is to grab it. You know, you get called for it. There's 3 seconds left. It's Florida ball with a 2-point lead. Florida possession, foul. Put them on the line. Hope they only make one of two, and you've got a chance for a quick 3-pointer to force overtime. Would have been a better scenario than what happened there, which was a mad scramble where Houston didn't have positioning to get back and get that ball. Florida ultimately gets it, ends up on the ground with his as the clock expires.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good point.
I didn't think there was much discussion of that scenario there. It was just kind of, yeah, game over.
I mean, you're probably in deep trouble either way, but yeah. You're right. Like, you know, at that point, the way it worked out, you got to try to extend the game. And it's just a really, you know, Kelvin Sampson, I was watching an interview he did after the game. I mean, you could tell it. He's just shell-shocked after what he saw the last two possessions there. And, you know, it's up. You go up, and if you're Emmanuel Sharp, there's a person right in your face. And, you know, if you let that shot go, that it's just getting sent back the other way. It's just that it was not really a good set. And, look, Florida's freakishly athletic. You were talking about it before the show. That's one thing that stands out about these teams. They're both huge and just freakishly athletic, and that's what made Florida so scary heading into this. But you really saw it, I thought, on those last couple of defensive possessions there.
So athletic. And, I mean, you know, can't help but – I mean, there's a lot of athleticism in the tournament. There's a lot of athleticism in the sport. That's the direction. I mean, there's still room for – I guess there's still room for a semi-unathletic guy to fit into an athletic team in some way, shape, and form. But, you know, I don't like your chances.
No,
to be a big role player if you don't have, you know. And you think of some of the big moments. I mean, Florida got a giant shot, right, along the way with their key guy running away from the basket to the three-point arc and turning around and heaving up a three. I mean, just some plays that are ridiculous. I thought it was a pretty likable Florida team and a pretty likable Houston team. They're no real villain here.
No. I guess Duke got bounced.
Yeah,
so.
Duke was a bit of a villain. But I think it was a lacking tournament in terms of that, in terms of teams with big team personalities like that.
Yeah.
I think that's part of what's chipping away at the tournament a little bit. It's still very good, but you know, the lack of team identities when you have some teams that have, you know, Kentucky completely new faces. I'm the old man yelling at the cloud, I suppose, but you know, you don't build up much of an identity as a team, certainly nationally, compared to how you used to in the good old days.
Well, it's interesting because, like, I think we've talked about from a fan standpoint, you know, Tennessee probably notwithstanding, because they actually have had some long tenured guys there.
Sure, Ziegler. I mean,
yeah, Fulkerson was there forever,
and those guys, they feel like they've been there 10 years when you've been there.
Exactly. So, but that they're not really the norm. Like, it's hard to have those players that the fan base rallies behind for any length of time now, because if they're really, really good, they're either going to the NBA, or if you're like a lower level team, they're transferring somewhere else and they're going to get, you know, a bigger spotlight somewhere. So it's hard to do that now in sports. I never really thought about it from the standpoint of what you just threw out there of like those days of teams that you just hate. Like everybody, most people, if you're not a Duke fan, you probably don't like Duke, but that's more to do with the brand and Krzyzewski and all those guys. But like those teams, I think it's going to be harder to have that moving forward because the guys just aren't around as long as they used to be. And they're either going off to the NBA or they're transferring elsewhere. It's hard to keep those teams together.
And it was their key guy as hateable? Is Cooper Flagg as hateable as hateable Duke players?
Well, he's certainly not as hateable as, you know.
Is he Christian Laettner?
He's not J.J. Redick. Yeah. He's not Christian Laettner.
Seems, you know, when he's playing bingo in that commercial.
Not Grayson Allen.
You're not. I'm not looking at him with contempt when he's playing bingo in whatever, whoever's commercial that is, the way I've looked at Duke guys in the past. I also, you know, Krzyzewski was a guy that added a lot of contempt to Duke for me.
Yeah.
Because I found him just so sanctimonious. And I had a lot of respect for him too, but I also found him sanctimonious, and that element is gone. So I think they've come back to the pack in terms of hateability. So I don't know. You know, there's no UNLVs anymore, yeah. Are there? You know, even Kentucky, who, you know, you can hate them because of the unrecognizability and the way they run the program. But
now Cal's gone.
Yeah, Cal's gone. And you can't hate a guy from what he did last year because last year he was playing somewhere else.
Yeah. Will Richard, 18 points for Florida last night. Walter Clayton Jr., a couple of big plays in that game. He's unbelievable to watch throughout the tournament. Hey, look, Florida. So Florida gets in here in Nashville, and they just roll through the SEC tournament, and they look like they were the best team in the nation heading into the tournament. And I looked at their draw and was like, all right, well, everybody's picking Florida. Like, all these people are picking Florida to win, and there's a lot of pressure that comes with that. And I thought there was a chance that UConn might get them in that second weekend, and they almost did. Like, Hurley made it a game there. But credit to Florida for a couple of different points in this tournament, including last night being down double digits in the game, where it looked like they were going to be out, but they were able to find a way to stick with it, fight back in there, and win. And I just think when you watch them, they were the most athletic team out there. And they're getting a kid next year that's apparently 7'5" that's going to be added into this mix, so that could be interesting. But I just thought from really the SEC tournament on, they clearly look like the best team in America, and now they finished it off last night. So congratulations to the Florida Gators.
And, you know, while I don't understand SEC fans rooting for a fellow SEC team, satisfying for the SEC in that regard to have so many teams in the tournament and have somebody finish it off.
Yeah.
You know, an uninteresting tournament in that it was only the second time with all four one seeds going there. I know there's a lot of argument about Cinderella's. You know, we like them when they win early. We don't like them when they lose late. You know, and I don't need a 9 seed in the Final Four, but you know, it's nice to have a story of somebody that's not a regular or not expected to be there. And when you get Auburn, Florida, Houston, Duke.
Straight chalk.
Straight chalk. It doesn't make the bracket game very fun.
I wonder if that's, you know, this was kind of a, you know, Joe's gone through some of the rankings. When you look at KenPom and all that stuff, like it's probably, if I had to guess, a one-off from that standpoint of just straight number one seeds and how highly ranked in those rankings those teams were. Like, those were clearly the best four teams in America. We've talked about, like, is this going to be the thing now with the transfer portal being what it is? Is it harder to generate some of those Cinderella teams? I don't know. Like, there's really only a couple years of data in modern college basketball to look at it at this point. So I don't know if we could say it's a trend yet, but I do wonder if moving forward, because of the portal and NIL and all that stuff, like, it's harder for these teams that don't have your typical budgets, for lack of a better word, to put together these Cinderella teams come tournament time. I don't know if we're going to see that moving forward. We certainly saw it this year. It was very difficult for those type of teams to get in the tournament and win.
Even Elite Eight, right?
Yeah.
Three.
Exactly.
Was as good as it got. So, yeah, we'll see if it goes that direction. But, you know, I didn't. Do people still stay up for One Shining Moment? I'm sure
I did not.
Do.
I'm sure not. Some do. Like, I know Rex Road loves it.
They don't have early morning radio.
Rex Road probably had it blasting courtside, if I had to guess. But I did not.
And he'll come home today and watch it on DVR or whatever version of that he has.
615.
With a tear rolling down his cheek.
We'll see you next March, next April. 615-737-1025. Our phone number. PK is with us all program long today. We got a lot of things to get into on the NFL draft and Titans front as well. We'll be joined by Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic at 7 o'clock. Mike Herndon from PaulKuharski.com will be with us at 8:30. Take your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. Want to get PK's thoughts on something that Diana Russini said on our program yesterday. We'll do that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Row, 1025-1063, the game.
I just think with all the change, something needs to settle. I get questions all the time about Brian Callahan's future. You know, is he on the hot seat this year? I have a hard time believing ownership wants to go through another change after so many over the last few seasons. So I think despite the fact that we usually see general managers come in and want to bring their own guys, I think Mike Borgonzi is going to try to make this work with Brian Callahan and hope that they're going to get the best version of the Titans. But I can tell you around the league, the belief in what Mike Borgonzi can bring to Tennessee, just from based on what he knows and has learned on his way up, he's obviously paid his dues. That's being applauded for that hire. So while I think it's hard to hear ownership moving on and letting go and being all in on Ran and, you know, appeared to be all in on Mike Vrabel, and then boom, they're gone. And, you know, Rand's gone and Mike's gone. I think for right now, they feel settled in this setup. We just have to see what it's going to look like.
That's Diana Russini yesterday on our show. Paul Kuharski with us today on the program. PK Russini discussing the Brian Callahan, Mike Borgonzi dynamic there. It says that based on this conversation she's had, they really think they're going to try to make that work. Now, as we know, it's April, so it's easy to say things like that in April. How does the season play out? What does it look like if the Titans are, you know, 4-13 next year? We'll see what happens when we cross that bridge. But what'd you make of what Diana Russini had to say on the Callahan-Borgonzi front there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's their intention too. But like you said, but how does it go? And do they need first off, I mean, I think Callahan has a lot to prove. And so how does it go with Callahan proving it? Particularly, you know, how does it go with Callahan shaping Cam Ward, which is what we all think is going to happen now? You know, how does Cam Ward react to Callahan and the offensive staff? What kind of results do they produce with a better offensive line? Conceivably a new receiver in the mix here and all that. If they see better signs, then I think he'll be in good position. But if they see more that looks like last year, I don't think he'll be in good position, despite the patience, you know, talk and conversation that's gone on and on. And then you've got a temperamental owner, and you don't know what the temperamental owner is going to do. And we've talked about this over and over, you know, how convincing was their sales pitch to her about this? She's faded into the background. Will she stay in the background when she's, you know, in the owner's box at these games, if she's watching more bad football that seems coach related?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, Rex Rowe threw it out there yesterday that, and we've talked with you a little bit about this. He feels like it's going to be – it feels at the moment like a little bit less of a hands-on approach from Amy Adams Strunk. Not that she's ever been, you know, Jerry Jones or anything walking around over there. And I'm not even talking from a media standpoint, because we know that that's been lacking and we've talked about that. But just in terms of the day-to-day stuff, it kind of feels like this is Brinker and Borgonzi's show. And she's sitting back and is going to let them do their thing. Now, then the question becomes, how long does that continue? And as they go through this next season, even if it is with Cam Ward, and you know with a rookie quarterback, the likelihood is, especially with where their roster is right now, that there's not going to be a whole lot of winning that comes with that next year. Can she sit through that and be patient with what I think is clearly a plan that Brinker and Borgonzi and everybody else have kind of sold her over there of what's going to be required here to build a winning team and an organization moving forward? Can she stick with that? That, I think, is going to be the big question. But Joe threw it out there. Like, he talked yesterday about, like, detecting, just based on the way that they're operating right now, a change on that front from her. Do you buy into that? And how important is that, if that's the case, of her maybe taking more of a step back?
Well, I don't know that he's detecting it from her, because we haven't heard anything
right
from her. So are we detecting it from the people that she has empowered to speak on her behalf?
I guess, yeah. I guess that would be the more accurate way to put it.
Yes, but we're detecting it from the people that she's empowered to speak on her behalf. But the people that she's empowered to speak on her behalf are the people who are speaking to her about doing this. So how much weight does that hold? That's the big question.
Right.
They're empowered to speak on her behalf, but they are speaking to her, encouraging her to do this. How much sway do they have with her? So they're speaking to us on her behalf outward, but they're speaking to her kind of on the fans' behalf. And the question is about the communication going inward,
yeah,
not about the communication coming outward.
No, that's a great point.
How powerful is that communication? That's the big question. And so we need to know the answer to that. But the other question is, and this is what I'm most curious about, Brian Callahan had a lot of work to do on himself, and he admitted that. You know, this team was committing a ton of penalties and doing a ton of stupid stuff, and those things are largely related to coach's ability to get through to his team and to convince it to be more self-disciplined and better. And he didn't get through to guys to do that. Now, sometimes guys are going to commit penalties because they're not good enough. Your tackle is going to jump and be flagged because he knows he's about to get beaten by the edge and kill the quarterback, and he feels like jumping at the risk of getting called for a penalty is a better alternative. All right, so they feel like they've got better tackle situation now. Those guys should be less prone to false starting. Are they? We'll find out.
One thing that Callahan talked about at his end-of-season press conference that I found to be pretty interesting at the time, and we'll see when camp rolls around and as they get into the season how much of a tangible difference it makes. But, you know, obviously he's the play caller on offense, and he talked about how he's clearly spending a lot of time with the quarterbacks. He's spending a lot of time in the offensive meeting rooms, and as a head coach, probably didn't do the best job of getting into the defensive rooms and getting around the team and making sure that the processes around all of that were going the way that he wanted to. So that all sounds good. Like, he wants to fix that moving into next year. I guess my question is, can you adequately fix that while you're still worried about the offense and the time that is required to go into the game planning side, putting a script together for your plays? Like, can you adequately address that the way that he feels like, I guess, he needs to after his first year by doing that? Like, that to me, you're going to have to rely a lot on Nick Holtz and your offensive staff to do that.
Yeah, you have to find a way to distribute it all, right? So if you're taking away a little bit of what you're doing on offense, then you're giving a little bit more of it to Holtz and now Mike McCoy in order to peek in a little bit more on the defense. You only have so much time. Now, a lot of these offensive head coaches who are play callers have very strong defensive coordinators and feel confident in not being over there as much. You know, Sean McVay, when he started, had Wade Phillips and, you know, was confident in doing that. Or when things were humming best for Mike Vrabel, you know, he maybe could do that less because Arthur Smith was doing such a good job. So you have to find the right balance. It sounds like he didn't feel like he found the right balance necessarily last year, and so he'll tinker with it a lot. I think if Denard has a better personnel and is able to do what he wants, then I don't know, you know, that Callahan will need to ride that seesaw to a different balance. But maybe at the beginning, it sounds like he certainly is going to want to, and then he'll find, you know, whatever angle that needs to be at, whatever the right slant is for him. But ideally, you know, his focus is going to be predominantly on offense. That's why he was hired.
Sure.
He's going to have a quarterback to be working with and spending a lot of time on and designing an offense for, and plenty of new players to deal with, and an offensive line that's revamped with his dad and all of that. So I don't know, if I'm a Titans fan, I would hope that his defensive side could handle it to whatever degree they need to handle it, with him paying the proper focus and giving the proper proportion of his attention to the offense.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. There was a deep dive taken on the Cam Ward front at paulkuharski.com yesterday. We'll get into that with PK coming up next. Robbie and Rexro, 1025-1063, The Game. Win an exclusive Jason Aldean experience. Text in the keyword Jason to 615-737-1025 and receive a link to sign up for a chance to win all-inclusive tickets to the Eurostone Club at Bridgestone Arena to see Jason Aldean, plus also a chance to win $1,000 in cash as well. Again, text the keyword Jason to 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025-1063 The Game, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Paul Kuharski from paulkuharski.com with me all day long today on the program. So, PK, a deep dive on Cam Ward taken yesterday at paulkuharski.com. Blake Bedingfield, who Titans fans are very familiar with around here, does a great job at kind of breaking down Cam Ward's strengths and weaknesses. You can check that out at paulkuharski.com. Lots of analysis here on the Cam Ward front in terms of, you know, some of the physical traits he brings to the table, some of maybe how quickly his game could translate at the NFL level. So as you were going through this with Blake Bedingfield on the Cam Ward front, what are maybe one or two things that really stand out to you the most as it relates to his breakdown of what the Titans could be getting with Cam Ward if that's the way they go, as we suspect, at number one overall?
Well, the good and the bad of the arm angle. We all know that he drops down and he throws from a lot of different slots, getting down into that sidearm, which there's good and there's bad to it, right? I mean, he can avoid some problems and get things out quickly and cleverly by doing that. But it also creates some danger. He didn't have a lot of passes batted down at Miami, but this is going to be different than Miami. And there's an invitation there while he's trying to fit things to get get himself in trouble with this ear level delivery. It can get him in trouble the way it pairs with his footwork. All angles are low for a shorter quarterback, Blake says, and at times it's the kind of way that a short quarterback throws, a non-factor if a quarterback can consistently throw, find throwing lanes for himself, but it becomes an issue if he does it with the pocket, in the pocket with linemen in front of him, and if defensive linemen are watching for tip balls. And we know increasingly that if defensive linemen cannot get to the quarterback, I mean, it's a regular feature that they stop and look to bat balls. And so I think it's a different element that he's going to face in the NFL and could create some problems for himself. And that's the way he's going to throw, right? I mean, they might try to encourage him to be a little bit more conscious of not dropping down as much. But, you know, you learn time and time again that the way a guy throws coming out of college is going to be the way a guy throws, generally speaking.
Yeah.
If you're aiming to refine his throwing motion very much, you're in trouble.
Like, I can think of one off the top of my head where the throwing motion was refined pretty significantly, and that was Rodgers. Like, Rodgers, go look at Rodgers coming out of Cal and then eventually what he turned into. It's a much different throwing motion. You know, Rodgers used to hold the ball kind of with both hands up here by his ear, and then they changed that with him. But to your point,
and he had a lot of time.
He had a lot of time. He didn't play for 3 years. So there's, you know, that's not going to be the case with Cam Ward. So by and large, I mean, you're right. When you draft a quarterback, you're kind of signing up for the mechanics that they've got, and you can make some, you know, some changes along the way there. But by and large, the throwing motion is what their throwing motion is.
And Blake's largely enthusiastic about him. I mean, he's got him like 15th, but clearly thinks he's the best quarterback in here, thinks he's an NFL starter, ideal for most NFL schemes, and, you know, can definitely do what Brian Callahan likes, working all three levels of the field and getting the ball out of his hand quickly to playmakers. So I think people will like what he has to say here. He writes these. He certainly wrote this like he would have written, I think, a scouting report, yep, you know, in-house. And he was with the Titans for 19 years. He still does consulting work for NFL teams, so he might be, you know, asked to look at running backs by a certain team or look at offensive linemen by another team. So I probably should have asked him to do this earlier, but seems like you know, couldn't get further along the Cam Ward road now with the cancellation of the Shedeur Sanders / Travis Hunter individual workout, which would have been tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that's also interesting in here that he brings up, which we've talked about a lot. It's not like this is, you know, some breaking news here, but, you know, do the Titans have enough personnel to succeed around Ward? It's kind of the way he finishes off here. And you're looking at what they've got right now, I think the answer is no. Now, there's still a draft to complete here and then more of free agency after that to get to. But, you know, one of the things that he brings up here is go back and look at quarterbacks that have succeeded after being drafted and go back and look at some that have failed. Is some of it just as simple as this guy was good enough and this other guy wasn't? Sure it was. But a lot of it can be traced back in his mind to, did the organization do what was required to set up these players for success? And that goes a long way in determining whether or not your quarterback is going to be successful. That ties in some ways back to the conversation we just had about Callahan. Like, is Callahan, in his second year here, drafting Cam Ward, like, can he show enough in year one with Ward where you're confident in that partnership moving forward? And if he doesn't, are you automatically setting Ward up for failure if you're just just firing Callahan after his first year in this system? It's a you know, Marcus, go back and look at him and the different coordinators that he had and everything. I'm not saying Marcus would have worked out because, like I said, sometimes you're just not good enough. But the Titans certainly have not helped some of these quarterbacks along in these situations.
Yeah, you give them a better chance. with a consistent level and similar approach year to year. If you're ultimately, if this is some kind of test for Brian Callahan, if the brain trust is thinking, we'll see, that's not a very good strategy. Because if you're picking a quarterback with number one in the draft, the number one pick in the draft, and your philosophy about your head coach is we'll see, you know, Cam Ward's not the youngest guy coming out. Now, I think that age thing with quarterbacks gets overplayed a little bit, but you want to give the guy every chance to excel. And if you're going to, you know, if you're going into this season thinking we'll see about the head coach, well, you know, if this is some sort of audition for Brian Callahan with Mike Borgonzi, first off, I don't think it's a very comfortable situation for Brian Callahan to do his best work, to relax, if you will. Not that it's a relaxing position, but you know what I mean.
Yep.
And then you're hiring in January. Then the guy's got a new playbook, and then, you know, some of their roster is not going to be favored by the head coach. It's a timing setback, and they need to talk all the time about the clock. They need to do everything they can to accelerate the clock, not just for Cam Ward, but for everybody. And having a lame duckish head coach does nothing for the franchise's clock.
Well, and beyond the roster, like I also think, you know, a lot of that's going to be on Callahan to show that he can be that guy.
Yeah.
Like I thought even with their roster limitations last year, which were, as the season went on, more and more evident. I mean, they couldn't block anybody. You know, we know what the roster issues were last year. I still didn't think as the year went on that Callahan had enough answers to some of those problems as the year went on last year. And he's got to find a way in year two to come up with some more answers and to look at, especially when you're drafting a rookie quarterback at number one overall, there needs to be some meaningful progress from that quarterback from the time you bring him into the building to the time the first game rolls around to the time game number 17 in the regular season is done. You need to see some dramatic improvement from that process together, because if you don't, then I think, and Ed brings this up on the text line, I think it's a fair question. If you don't see that, then I think you look around if you're the Titans and you say, well, you know, we really don't want to wreck the quarterback here and bring in another coach and do all that. But, like, we gave this guy a shot with Will Levis, and Levis looked like he got worse as the year went on and as the season in year two under Callahan. And now Ward has come in, and there's been really no progress to speak of or not enough meaningful progress to see. At some point, you look at the coach and you ask, okay, does he know what he's doing? Like, is he the guy we thought he was when he was brought in to be this quarterback guy?
And Callahan is a beaut in terms of candor. I think, and I'm not putting this on outgoing PR, but I think this is something incoming PR could do that would help him. Like, he fell into a coach better, play better with me there. I think they could be more hyper aware of stuff like that. Like, this market is allergic to coach better, play yes. better from Vrabel, who was, I think, everybody after a year of Callahan certainly will say he's a good coach. And depending on what happens in New England, you know, I'm expecting New England to have a decent trajectory. Give Callahan a couple, you know, coach him with a couple of, like, rotate through these four different alternatives to coach better, play better.
Yeah. Come up with something else. Titans fans are going to throw themselves around if you keep saying stuff like that. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We do have Preds Pick to Click coming up next. Be the first caller at 615-737-1025. We'll get to more of your thoughts on the Titans front, plus a move yesterday that the Titans have now made official. We'll get PK's thoughts on all that. Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic coming up at 7 o'clock. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Preds Pick to Click on Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We need a caller, 615-737-1025. If you guess the goal score tonight for the Preds, you'll win a pair of tickets to a future Nashville Predators home game. Be caller number one, 615-737-1025. A standings update, Rex Road is in fantastic shape, basically purely with the assistance of Paul Kuharsky to win this competition. I think Kuharsky's gotten three for him this year.
Carrying him on my back, which is hard to do.
And he's up by three. Rex Road, 15 correct answers. The listeners with 12. I'm at 7. Keys are moved up to 5 last time out. So Kuharsky's 3 wins in this competition, the difference so far between Rex Road and the listeners at Preds Pick the Click, which means, PK, you're up first today in the competition. Preds are taking on the New York Islanders tonight. Your pick to click for the Nashville Predators.
I'll go Forsberg.
Philip Forsberg, the selection by Paul Kuharsky. So Forsberg is off the board. I told you, there's only a couple guys right now that are even really approaching scoring for the Predators at the moment. Forsberg, certainly one of those guys. I'm going to go, you know, I've got a hunch tonight. I'm going Michael Bunting on the power play. So I'll go Michael Bunting for the Predators. Forsberg and Bunting are off the board. Kieser is on the phone with someone right now who is going to be a part of our competition as well. So we'll get that those thoughts here in just a minute. By the way, big game tonight for the Islanders. Predators with, I think, five more. We got five more? Five more games coming up for the Nashville Predators.
Nick was really chatting that dude up.
He was. Let's go to Keith and welcome him in. Keith, thanks for calling in the Preds Pick to Click. Forsberg and Bunting are off the board. Your pick to click tonight for the Nashville Predators.
I guess I'll go Stamkos.
Going with Steven Stamkos. Thank you, Keith, for the call. So Stamkos, Forsberg, Bunting off the board. Keyser, your pick to click.
I'm going to go with, it's really late, it doesn't matter. I'm going to go with Nick Blankenberg. Why not?
He is on the top power play unit. So Nick Blankenberg for Nick Keyser. Stamkos, Forsberg, Bunting, Blankenberg, the selections in Preds, pick to click. PK, the Titans make a move official yesterday. So Stilley talked about this a few weeks ago, that they were targeting this person. You advanced that report last week. And now the Titans have made it official that Taylor Zarzur is the next voice of the Tennessee Titans, following in the footsteps of Mike Keith, and that he's going to be filling the role that Keith leaves behind there. So Zarzur coming in, who's done a lot of things with the SEC Network. He's been on calls for some pretty big SEC football games. Has a history here in town with a radio show he did in town at this point, almost, what, 20 years ago at this point. So what do you make of now what the Titans have made official, PK, and Taylor Zarzur coming in to fill in the footsteps of Mike Keith?
I'm not that familiar with his work, but I think he's talented and a solid pick. Jim Nance endorsed, which certainly carries
that helps a
lot of weight. Again, I'm surprised I shouldn't be by fan reaction, and maybe it's disproportionate what I'm getting. People are just so provincial. I just wish it was a guy from here that I could relate to. There is a whole big world out there. Mike Keith was one of a kind guy, and it was great that he was local and that you could relate to him in that way. This is 30 years ago, and you got 30 great years out of Mike Keith. But, you know, there wasn't necessarily somebody in this local pool who was a home run pick that had experience calling games at a high enough level to be the guy. And so how about, like, you're going to be open-minded with Cam Ward, who's not local?
Yeah.
I mean, I understand it's a different thing. But when the guy sits in the chair and starts calling the game, I think, you know, is he talented at calling the game? And how's his voice sound?
Yeah.
How does the fact that he shops at the same Kroger you do influence that? Just like, why? It's such a small town thinking. It makes you unworthy of having a major league team.
I've always, you know, people do this too with, like, go hire, and it's really a college sports thing. It's like Tennessee fans have done this all the time of, like, go hire our guy to be the coach. And it's like, why don't you just go hire the most qualified person? Like, why can't we do that? Like, I don't care where Taylor's are. And by the way, he's got a background here, so it's not like he's completely unfamiliar with this place. But, like, if Taylor Zarzer, and I've watched a lot of Taylor Zarzer, he's good. Like, he's a good play-by-play guy. That's really the only thing I care about. Like, are you good at the job? So, I haven't seen a ton of that as far as the reaction. Look, I am fully aware that when you're following somebody like Mike Keith, that's a hard thing to do. Like, I'm aware of that, and there are going to be some Titans fans that are like, well, he's never going to be Mike Keith. And
he's not.
Look, he's not. So, I think you have to know that going into it. But, like, for everything I know about the guy, he seems like a pretty good hire for the Titans. So, and I know he can call games. I've watched him call games. So, I know from that standpoint they're going to be fine. So, I'm cool with it. I think it's a good move by the Titans.
Give a guy a chance. Give a guy a chance. And don't predetermine you don't like him because he didn't grow up here. You know, there are a lot of good people who've done a lot of good things for this organization who didn't grow up here.
I mean, you didn't grow up here, and look how much of a peach you are.
Yeah. Well, guess who didn't grow up here? The organization didn't grow up here.
That's a good point. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll be joined by Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic coming up next. We'll get into the NFL draft with him. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up next hour. Mike Herndon from PaulKuharsky.com will be with us at 8:30. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.